Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Macko and Cos podcast. Just like we always do. I bet people are thinking, oh, they missed a week. They're back to their old shenanigans. But Bob was up cottaging and fishing and communing with nature. And we're back doing it here. Bob, great to see you. How you doing?
It's nice to be back. Just a quick recap of my fishing trip.
Yeah.
I caught my first pike.
Ooh. So let's start here. Pike are like some of the ugliest motherfucking fish out there.
It's
like
true. They are the Brad Marchand of fish.
Yes. It's often been said. Like just the teeth and just the biting. So take us through it.
I threw the line out, and I had been getting nothing for about 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, you think you catch weeds at first. And I've been catching weeds all day long. And then suddenly I thought, weeds don't fight back. I might have something. And I just assumed it was a sunfish because that's a specialty of mine.
Yeah.
But I reeled it in, and I thought, long snout, teeth, Brad Marchandy, I think I've got a pike.
Congrats.
Thank you.
Also catching weeds. Someone's been hanging out with fisher people, learning some of the lingo.
Well, you know, when I flip the bail and I toss it out there, Maddie. Yeah. what I've learned about pike, interestingly enough, is they're huge, but they kind of don't fight. They sort of just lay there. It would be like if you slept with a supermodel, but at the end you thought, I don't know if that went well.
There's actually, I think it's in, forgetting Sarah Marshall, there was a scene where he's sleeping with a model and she just kind of just laid there. So the crazy thing is, when I think pike, I think aggressive, angry teeth. I did not know that they would just sit there and just sort of, you know, just float around.
Smallmouth bass.
Yeah.
That's where it's at, Maddie. If you want to fight, and my nephew Stevie, he won the tourney. We all put in $25 and whoever got the biggest fish, he went at 3 a.m., with an industrial light out to the dock and caught a 14-inch largemouth bass.
You guys didn't have a chance, did you?
No.
No. Like, you're like you're Prairie View taking on Alabama at that sort of point. Also, one other fishing question.
Okay.
The sunfish or the rock bass? Which is just the most participation trophy, participation ribbon of all the fish out there?
Sunfish, pumpkin seed, rock bass.
Yeah.
I always am worried when I catch those. And generally you catch those when you're with kids because you're just throwing a worm near the dock.
Yeah.
They're not really into fishing. They don't want spinners and lures and yada, yada. You toss it in next to the dock and that's where the small fish are. I always have apprehension because those bastards take the hook,
and then you look, now you got the pliers out, you got to fight through it, and it's for nothing. It's for something you're going to throw back in the water. And you know what the worst part is? I've seen this where I've caught a rock bass, thrown in the water, thrown a line back in, and I've seen the same fish go back at it again. I'm like, you are taking all the majesty out of fishing.
And when you're unhooking it, I don't know about you, but I have unhooking apprehension. I have unhooking anxiety.
Yeah.
It's like unhooking a bra when you're a teenager. You're like, God, I hope this goes because I'm just fumbling. Man, I seem to have a dirty mind today. But anyway.
Yeah.
And then there's always a kid going, is the fish okay?
Oh.
Is the fish okay? And you're thinking, I can't let this fish die.
No.
They know what a floating fish is. I have to save this fish. And all of a sudden you go into full ER mode.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. The pressure. Because, A, you're dealing with the hook and the fish is disgusting, but you can't have the fish die. The dies and the kid's sad. And oh, that is a whole to-do.
The thing about a big fish is, generally, they don't take the whole hook.
Mm-hmm.
They get it caught in their lip. And,
yeah,
you know, they don't have a lot of nerve endings. So I'm sure it's distressing to an extent. And I try to park that in a tiny little cabinet at the back of my mind.
Let's all just believe fish never feel any pain. And we'll move on with ourselves and hope if there is reincarnation, God doesn't have a sense of humor.
Well, I think if history has shown us anything, God has a tremendous sense of humor.
So I always said, I want to come back as a turtle. They live longer than humans.
That's true. Assholes. They're great. Turtles are just great. So anyway, it was a very nice trip. We had a very good time. We had chunky cottage French fries, you know, all the good stuff.
Nice.
So how about your week? How are you?
I'm doing well. I had a colonoscopy on Saturday. And let's get to the end part.
You know, they tell you, okay, well, afterwards, if there's any polyps or anything, then we'll see you in 5 years or maybe less. We'll monitor it. If everything's good, we don't need to see you for a decade. I was in the we don't need to see you for a decade. So that was all very good. Everyone talks about how disgusting the juice is you have to drink the day before. Mm-hmm. They tell you it was fine. It's just like, it's like a light fruity drink. You drink 3 liters of water in a couple hours. Then you got to wake up early the next morning, drink another liter of it. But Bob, I was born for this. As you know, of course, I am very repressed when it comes to pooping and everything of it. But I get the place set up. Amy is nowhere to be around. She's down here. She knows what's going on. I brought a candle that I got from Niagara on the Lake as a gift with Cabernet Sauvignon grape skins in the candle for that smell. And I dominated. I'm going to tell you, the day before colonoscopy, I dominated it.
Did you sequester yourself?
Oh, there was a lot of sequestering. I've got to tell you, I have never seen so much Instagram videos in my life.
I watched 5 seasons of The Wire.
I felt so dumb. This was my first time going, oh, the social media scrolling. And it wasn't doom scrolling. All my stuff is all pleasant things for the most part. Some evil things sneak in. But I got to tell you, I felt just so dumb. I wish I'd watched The Wire. I just watched Instagram and read articles.
You should share your feed with people because most of us, our shark nets aren't that great for blocking out the negativity.
Yeah.
But because you are the most positive person in the world, and proof would be the story you just told wherein you enjoyed the liquid that gets you prepped for the colonoscopy.
Yeah. Sure.
If that's not the working definition of seeing the bright side of things, yeah. I don't know what is.
Oh, yeah. No.
I had some time to myself. I got to flip through Instagram. Yeah, Matt. Well, I'm happy you're well.
Yeah.
I'm happy you're well.
The weird thing is when you're sitting there and you know the next thing that's going to happen is they're going to knock you out.
No, Matt, the weird thing is that you can't stop pooping for 24 hours.
Well, no, the pooping thing
that's
is
That's the weird thing.
Yeah, that part I dealt with. But when I'm lying on the table, you know, and I got to tell you, the people in charge of the the stuff to knock you out, I didn't do well in science. I forget what everything is called. It's very, very comforting. It's very calm and soothing. And it was so weird. He's like, okay, so what is your next
big... Do you mean the anesthesiologist?
That's it. Thank you. Thank you.
Sorry.
That's a hard word. Just imagine, where's your next trip going to be? What meal? And now I'm thinking New Zealand and short ribs. And the next thing I know, I'm like, I'm all groggy and I'm getting woken up. It's very strange.
The first time I was ever knocked out, I had to get my wisdom teeth done and they were kind of impacted. And so they knock you out. It's a procedure. And I woke up and did you have the, I'm not really here 20 minutes?
Yes.
Like I'm here, but I'm not here.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy.
It is so crazy. So I was feeling still some pain, and I said to the nurse, apparently, can you help me out here? And she was shoving gauze in my mouth, and I started trying to pick her up.
What? Really?
You're so nice. I appreciate this so much. So I've just had my wisdom teeth out. I'm getting my cheek packed with gauze. I'm delirious with anesthetic.
And you're trying game on her?
I don't think it worked.
Did you say, I hope you're not like the supermodels who just lie there when we're making love to each other?
Oh, mercy. Well, I'm glad you're well. And honestly, Matt, because over the course of 25 years, I have given up trying to defeat you. Mm-hmm. Your way is the right way.
Yeah.
So the Be Like Matt has now taken on a whole new level.
Yeah.
Oh, great. I get to do a colonoscopy.
I will say the only thing, don't do what Donnie Don't does.
Okay.
I did afterwards. Me and Amy went up to the cottage. Don't worry. She drove. And I did Google, when can I consume wine after a colonoscopy?
What was the answer? 24 hours?
It said 24 hours. I'm like, yeah, this is like, oh, don't swim for 2 hours after a meal. And it said things like, you know, it could make you groggy or impaired. I'm like, I'm going to the cottage. There's a couch. There's Netflix. There's a sunset. You know what? What's the big deal?
It could make me groggy and impaired. Yeah. It better make me groggy and impaired. That's what I'm here for.
Yeah, so I was fine. I survived all of that. So anyway, that was Matt's adventure with the colonoscopy.
All right.
And
well,
all men, go and do it. If it's time or you're getting close to it, get it done. It's not a big deal unless you live in a 600-square-foot place with one bathroom and it's got the barn door.
All right, I have an important announcement, yep, or I have a new bit. What do you want to do first?
Let's do the important announcement. That'd be an asshole move for me to go, ooh, new bit.
I want to change the name of the pod.
What? We then we have to get it revoiced? I don't know. Nicole Stamp is a lot more famous now. She might charge the rate, but I'm here for it. Never start with no, right, start with yes.
Hear me out. You and I have been Macko and Kaws since, what, 2015?
Oh, before that, with TSN 1050, I'd say like 13.
Yeah, somewhere around there. So yeah, let's say in the vicinity of a decade.
Over a decade, yeah.
And during that time, we have wildly underperformed.
Okay, yes.
Never lived up to our full potential.
That's true.
And taken opportunity and squandered it at every turn.
Can't disagree.
Okay. So, but Macko and Kaws is a good name, because mm-hmm, I'm Macko and you're Kaws.
Hey.
So here's, I'm going to take a page out of the marketer's textbook, and here's my name for the pod now.
Can I guess?
Sure.
Taylor Swift.
No, that's good though. Okay. No, but I do feel eventually people will catch on. No, I've got this and it delivers on the promise of it. Are you ready?
Yeah.
The new Macko and Kaws.
Ooh. This will be like new Coke, but better.
Right.
And we'll get a different spokesman. I feel the last one. It's what the kids call problematic. So the new Macko
and Kaws. The new Macko and Kaws. Think about it. Whenever you hear that, you always think, oh, it must be better.
Yeah.
It's new because they took the old thing and they improved it. I'm not going to say the new and improved Macko and Kaws, but just the new Macko and Kaws. Do you remember a long time ago when there was a small little station out of Barrie called CKVR?
Yes.
And then Moses Neimer bought it and it became the new VR.
That's right.
And it was VR. The new VR for the next 25 years.
Oh my God, you're so right. God, he was smart.
And really, almost nothing changed.
It's pretty much
almost nothing changed. It was almost, the budgets were the same, so the production values were the same. The programming was basically the same, but they were the new VR, and ratings went up.
All right, so...
And here's our motto. Yeah, yeah. You ready?
Yeah.
Now, we're going to try.
All right, 3, 2, 1. Hey, everyone, and welcome to the new Macko and Kaws podcast. In this edition, we are really going to try. I'm Matt Kaws. That's Bob Mackowitz. Bob, how was the King Street car?
It was fine because I avoided it today. In fact, it was in my way because I rode my bike here.
Oh, perfect.
Jaws, wine,
bike,
food
reference. And and then we're out.
Okay, you ready for the new bit?
Yeah.
It's called Bob's Poem.
Okay. Ooh, all right.
Now, I'm not writing a poem each time. But I was thinking, you know how I always ask you for wine recommendations?
Yes.
Well, I read a lot of poetry. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, what if I could find a poem that somehow applied itself to the world of sports?
Okay.
And read a part of that poem, and then we could discuss it. It would be an entree into a topic.
I don't know. Barstool Sports have been doing this poem thing for years, Bob, but we can give it a shot.
I was thinking about this. I was thinking about you because I was thinking about fantasy sports. And then I was thinking about the Roman poet Catullus.
Of course.
And a poem he wrote. I'll read it first in the Latin and then the translation into English. Okay?
Wow, this is hitting a new level of... When you throw it in Latin, Bob, bravo.
You ready?
Or brava.
You ready? Odi et amo quare id faciam fortasse requiris, nescio sed fieri sentio et excrucior. Translation. I hate and I love. Why do I do this, perhaps you ask? I know not, but I feel it happening. And I am tortured. I thought about that when I was playing fantasy sports this weekend.
That's brilliant. First off, excellent on the Latin, Bob.
Thank you.
You fucking nailed it. You're like Dead Poets Society, but better.
Quick Latin sidebar here, because it is...
Or have a long Latin sidebar.
Yeah, it's the new Macko and Kaws.
Yeah, we're trying.
I got caught cheating on my grade 11 Latin exam.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wasn't cheating for me. I actually just stopped going to class, so they made me write the exam. But I went with like a 90. But Peter Reamer, who was sitting behind me, went in with about a 14. And so he said, can I copy off your paper? And honestly, it was like Spies Like Us. He managed to copy my paper exactly, which statistically should be impossible considering that I had 76% higher than him going into the exam. And I'll never forget when I went home and my mom said, did you get caught cheating on your exam? Because they phoned home, right? And I said, I did. Long pause. And then she just went, shut up. And my dad was interviewing Sting that day.
Really?
And he sat down with Sting, and Sting said, how are you? And he said, my son just got caught cheating on his Latin exam. And he said, don't worry about it. I got caught cheating on mine too.
Oh my God, that's a great story.
Okay.
A, the humor from your mom. B, your dad's such a baller, hanging out with Sting. And how
that lousy cheater.
That lousy cheater. I mean, he cheated on his last name.
Do you know what the punishment they gave me was? I had to take Latin again the next year with the same teacher.
Oh, no.
That was my punishment.
Was that more of a punishment for you or the teacher?
Both.
Yeah.
They took us, you know, sometimes, you know, kill them all, let God sort them out. Isn't that what the airborne motto is?
What was Peter's last name again? The guy?
Peter Reamer.
Well, I wonder what Peter Reamer's doing now. I hope he's like some massive, like, mega CEO, you know.
Of course he is. Well, he learned how to cheat perfectly, so.
So did you, that poem, did you come up with that when Tyreek Hill got injured in the Monday night game? And if you missed it, it's fine. The Monday night games last night were complete dog shit.
No, it was when I was watching CeeDee Lamb on the sideline, and I had paid $55 for CeeDee Lamb. And my theory was that, and we talked about this, that the Cowboys are going to have a bad defense. They're going to need to throw the ball all the time. And Dak Prescott is living up to that.
He's been great.
He's been great. He is killing it in fantasy. He's doing a real good job in real life. So the idea of CeeDee Lamb would be the beneficiary of this, that CeeDee would be the best receiver in the NFL, as he should have been last year, but he had a kind of an off year. So I took the gamble. I had to choose between CeeDee and Saquon Barkley. Who could I afford to keep? I went with CeeDee for all of these reasons. And then he gets hurt. And it's killing my team because he's one quarter of my budget.
Yeah. Well, that's it. You know, this, when you invest so much in one player, this one hurts. The benefit is Saquon Barkley has been bad. And I said it coming on radio. I'm like, don't draft Saquon Barkley. There's never been in history a guy that did that in 1 year that came close the next year. So that's the good. The bad is George Pickens had his best day as an NFL receiver in that 40-40 tie. And every time he has a catch, you're like, that should have been CD. Every time he got a touchdown, you're like, Lamb!
James Conner is out.
Yep. Done for the year.
He was my running back number two.
Yeah.
I took Omarion Hampton, and that's been great for me.
That's been great.
And I thought, okay, I'll have the rookie risk,
yep,
and then the solid back that's going to get me a guaranteed 20, you know, 18 to 20 a game. And I've got 8 guys on the injured list right now.
It's the worst. Fantasy football is the worst. I say it every time. I love doing the draft. And then afterwards, we should all put our sheets with all our teams in a pile outside, burn them, and we shake hands like men over an open flame, and we move on with our lives.
So to go back to it, why do I do this? Perhaps you ask. I know not, but I feel it happening, and I am tortured. So, Matt, what was my response to this?
Fuck. Oh, what your mom said to you. Shut up.
No, that's what my response should have been, Matt. Yeah. What my response was is I called the commissioner of the hockey league and I said, can I get in? And he said, sure.
Oh, no.
And basketball, too. So now I'm also in a hockey and a basketball fantasy league.
Okay. So you're a bad husband. We could start there. Clearly, CeCe is 100% independent and she needs nothing to do with her father. Because if you're going in multiple sports fantasy leagues, Bob, that is a commitment. I won't do that. I have one fantasy football league. That's it.
Your discipline is always amazing to me. Mm-hmm. This is the same discipline that gets you to figure out where's the perfect place to put your shoes next to the door to shave time on your way to the elevator.
I've got the wash going on right now. It'll be done right when this is done. My phone is being charged, so it should be 100%. I'm disciplined in every way, except for wine. I Googled when I can start drinking wine, and I told Google to shut up. But but I cannot go in more than one fantasy sports league. I want Gareth Wheeler just wrote me into one of his 1 year, and I was miserable. And I can't do it. I wish you all the best. I think Jack Eichel, was Eichel going to be with Marner? I think that's a great one to keep an eye on. But I can't go into fantasy.
Well, Matt, I'm a new guy in all of these leagues. So basically, I'm at the mercy of the expansion draft.
That's not going to be good.
So all these are an investment in the future. Okay, so you mentioned baseball off the top. As much as I do want to do football because there's some fun topics this week, we got to do baseball.
Yeah.
I have a thought about the Jays and the season and the upcoming playoffs. Congratulations, Jays. But go for it. You've had to talk about this team all season long. So when they clinched a division, what was your take?
I was so impressed. I was so impressed because they had lost like 6 of 7, and the Yankees stopped losing games. Mm-hmm. Now, part of it, they were taking on the White Sox, but they stopped losing. The Jays didn't get to Lazy River their way into winning the American League East and winning the American League. They had to do it knowing they had to win every goddamn game. And they had to do it without Bobichet and with Vlad's power numbers not being there. And they found a way. And they had the Dalton Varsho grand slam on Thursday against Boston, then sweeping the weekend. And to me, the best moment was a 13-4 game. You would think, oh, blowout. Fun. It wasn't fun. In the fourth inning, it was 5-4. Gausman gets pulled. Bases are loaded. Two out. The DH from Tampa, who'd already had like 2 or 3 RBI in that game alone, is up at the plate. And they bring in the rookie, Mason Fluharty, and he strikes him out, and he gets a 1-2-3 fifth, allows the Jays offense to take over. And I was just so impressed. And like that moment there with this rookie really encapsulated the season, because it was an unexpected season with a lot of just people you didn't expect to contribute who did.
He kind of reminded me a bit of Brett Cecil. In that he was a lefty that you want to put into a high leverage moment and with the big sweeping curve.
That's a great analogy. That might be better than your Brad Marchand
Pike
analogy. Both are very good.
I was like, obviously that game was thrilling, and it's amazing when Alejandro Kirk does well because mm-hmm. he's so lovable. The big catcher, the slow chubby catcher, is one of the great baseball tropes of all time.
Yep.
When he got the base from Vlad after he stole his first base, and probably his only base that he'll ever steal, was one of the great moments of the season. I feel like this team got ripped off, and it's kind of their fault, but not really. And the reason I thought this is because watching that game, as I think a lot of us did, it was the one that probably everybody in the city watched from beginning to end.
Yeah.
Buck and Dan were trying to say, and the fans have been great, and the fans love this team, they've been so behind this team. And it's not true. It is not true. If you've lived through the 85 Jays or the 87, 89, 92, 93, 2015, when this city goes Jays crazy, it is Jays crazy. It is the conversation on everybody's lips. Think back to, you know, the 80s when we were breaking attendance records in MLB, and every night was 50,000 people insanely happy at the Sky Dome. We haven't had that kind of excitement around this team, even though statistically it is among the greatest Jays teams that have ever been fielded in the 49 years of this franchise. And I feel like these guys got ripped off because they did everything that should make them lovable. And if they win in the playoffs, it's going to be a really weird experience because people are going to have to flip the switch from wait and see to total passion. We're not going in hot. We're going in kind of cold.
It's interesting that we have different perceptions on it.
Now, okay.
I don't think the fans were as nuts as when it was setting 3 million and it's 50 whatever thousand at Sky Dome. But I think, you know what it is? I think it took a while for the fans to be won over because they had 74 wins last year. Because Vlad was sort of the one underperforming player, and I think that got people's backs up. I think also it's just really more expensive to go to a game than it ever has been. But I think it is a very lovable team because it combines two things we love. Winning, that's still number one, and a lot of feel good. Like feel good all over the place. Springer, Kirk, Barger, Lorperfido, like the, you know, there's the feel good all over the place. So I, you know what? I mean, maybe it's just we run in different circles. I don't think it was as high as what it was in that run in the 90s, but I think to me it felt higher than maybe what you're perceiving it.
Maybe, but I also think that you're inside the sports world. And
yeah.
I talk to average sports fans.
Yes, and most, that's what I mean.
Yeah. Most of the people I talk to when I'm, you know, two guys standing around the curb waiting for their daughters to come out of the mall, mm-hmm. right? And you have a chat. For months, I've been talking about the Leafs, and the Jays have almost never come up. Even as they were, you know, turning around a bad spring, and they were lovable. I wrote down a list of all the things that should make this team one of the most loved teams in recent Toronto memory. They went from worst to first. Who doesn't love that story? They had an incredible home record. So not only did they win a lot, they won a lot at home, which makes it easier to like them and a lot more fun to go to the ballpark. The lovable players, as you said. And also, they won the season series against Boston and the Yankees.
Yep.
And a bit like college football, when you hate your rivals so much, you can have an okay season, but you know, as long as Notre Dame beats Ohio State, it couldn't have been that bad.
Well, it's the joke. Ohio State won the national championship, and Michigan beat them in the regular season. So who really was the best team in college?
Right. Yeah. So we're not quite there with our AL East rivals, but if you've loved this team from the beginning, God, it's not hard to hate everybody. Like, except for the Baltimore Orioles, the other three teams, my day's always a little better when the Jays beat them.
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, and we took out Tampa at the end.
Yes. Stupid Tampa.
Tampa, who were our Buffalo Sabres to the Leafs for so long, for some crazy reason, they could always find a way to beat us.
Yep.
In a way, I might be talking about myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to find a way to love this team. And I think there's only one way to do it. Win that first round.
Yeah.
So I want to play a game called Narrative Check with you, Maddie.
Oh, let's do it.
In order for this to be a good playoffs and a good season, they have to win the first round.
Absolutely. 100%. Because it's not only that they haven't won a playoff. They haven't done any win the playoffs since 2016. It's how they've lost. Going meekly into that good night. Jose Barrios being pulled after like two innings against Minnesota. And that moment still reverberates today. And that was like 3-4 years ago. So yes, they need to win the ALDS. They need to beat either the Yankees or the Red Sox in the divisional round.
Okay. Narrative check. Number two, this has to be a good playoff for Vladdy, win or lose, Jays.
Oh, God, yeah. On so many levels. First, do you know who's really rooting for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to have a good series?
Vlad?
Him as well. Auston Matthews.
Yes.
Because if Vlad is bad, everyone is going to bring up Auston Matthews comparisons. And Austin's going to be like, guys, it's October. What the fuck? Why are you slinging the arrows at me, okay? It's game four of the regular season. We're figuring out not having Marner here. But to the bigger point, he had 23 home runs. And it's fine if he doesn't hit 50. Clearly, that's not who he is. But in a year where Bo Bichette and Springer and Kirk and everyone, not named Santander, everyone either hit the level that was expected or overachieved. Dalton Varsho, Barge, I can go on and on and on. The only guy who didn't was Vlad. So 100% all eyes are going to be on Vlad. Where one other thing, look at the winning percentage of teams in the playoffs when they out-homer their opponent. The playoffs, and this is a generalized simplification, come down to two things. Can you hit one more home run than your opponent? Can you strike out your opponent? That's it.
This is what makes the Yankees so worrisome, is they hit dingers and bunches.
Yep.
But and the Jays tend to win by good defense. They don't strike out a lot. They play the smart way. They don't beat themselves very often. Something to be said for dingers. By the way, Matty, you know how I always make notes for our episodes? Because yep. It's the new Macklin cause.
The new Mac, we're trying.
Because now we're really trying.
We're really trying.
I don't know if you can read my writing, but where my thumb is, can you read what I wrote under the first narrative check thing there?
I wrote, he's no...
No, he's like...
Oh, yeah, he's like Matthews, only...
Matters in playoffs.
Yes, oh God, yeah. It's absolutely... Like this is... It is such an easy connection to bring. And if you're Matthews, like, come on, Vlad. I don't want my name to be brought up now.
Every time Vlad strikes out against the Yankees, the Red Sox,
yeah,
Auston Matthews' name is going to trend.
Oh, yeah. Mitch Marner's like, I'm glad I'm in Vegas. No one seems to be in Vegas. That city seems to be in trouble. But I'm glad I'm
Well, he
here.
Wanted to go to a safe city.
Yeah.
So he went to Vegas.
Yeah.
What were the guns like in Vegas, Matt? Didn't you go to a gun range in Vegas?
Yeah, I went to a gun range when I was 25 years old. And I'm glad I did it for the tactile experience. I will never do it again. Mm-hmm. So I did it once as a 25-year-old, all the novelty guns and machine guns. And then afterwards, I'm like, I treat the way I did golf. I tried it. I'm like, all right, I'm done with this. I can move on with my life.
By the way, not to move, because that disturbs me so much, and I don't know that I want to talk about guns, mm-hmm. although I did bring it up.
Yeah.
To go back to the Matthews-Vladdy comparison, I was also starting to think that the Leafs are the Jays of the team that we wish the Leafs were. Here's my list. You got a superstar on top, but underneath is a balanced team that's determined to win by committee. They win big games, the Jays do. They don't make stupid mistakes, and they've overachieved.
Yes.
this is the team we wish the Leafs were. The Leafs are kind of the opposite of that list.
Well, you could say that's who the Leafs want to be this year.
This year
is going to be that one, because no more Marner, more depth, all that, all those storylines. Absolutely.
Okay, so player you're watching. It's hard to talk about the Jays right now in terms of the next. We don't know who they're going to face.
Yeah.
And we got a week till we get there. But the player you're most interested in watching who's not Vladdy.
I'll throw out not Bo Bichette as well, because I think that's the easy one.
Right.
We'll find out if he's healthy. I'll go Trey Savage. Is he going to be the number three starter? Do they make him the super middle relief guy? I'm assuming he's going to be the number three starter, but see how healthy Bassett is. Just, you know, I don't think it's going to be Max Scherzer, clearly. But I'll go with Trey Savage, just because we don't know what his destiny looks like.
I'd like to believe, this is a classic sports cliche, but I'd like to believe that his inexperience won't hold him back because he doesn't know what he's supposed to know.
Yeah.
You hope he just goes out there and throws, because he's been pretty electric. And to your point about home runs, you know, the other thing is strikeouts. Can you keep guys off the base?
Yeah.
You want, if we play the Yankees and they hit their solo home runs, okay, great. Don't walk anybody. Don't give up needless, you know, hits. Don't let them put big innings together, because that's how they can beat you. So I kind of feel like this guy strikes batters out. It can get you out of a lot of trouble.
Yeah, and he pitched great on Saturday. Again, it was a must-win game. It's like, okay, kid, go beat Tampa. And if you don't, we know the Yankees aren't losing. So if you lose, well, then we're playing on Tuesday against Garrett Crochet. Enjoy. So, you know, like he's done really well. Who's your guy?
I'm going to say Alejandro Kirk. Mm-hmm. Just because he was slumping so badly going into the final weekend. And you can see what happens when he's on. He's got a bit of Reggie Jackson in him, and that he's got an energizing factor, a bit of the straw that stirs the drink.
Yep.
You know, he's an all-star, and sometimes I think we forget that because we talk so much about Vladdy and Bo and Gausman. But underneath all that, Kirk is, he's not a dominant player, but he's an excellent player. And also, you win baseball up through the middle, starting at catcher, then pitcher, then shortstop, then center field. If you can line up that middle, the rest of the game becomes a lot easier. Mm-hmm. And it starts with the catcher. And his numbers in terms of framing and framing success are really high. And in a short series where pitching becomes so important, having a catcher who can help your pitcher get over the hump by doing some really quality framing of pitchings for the ump, that can make a huge difference. The great thing about playoff baseball is every at-bat matters.
Oh, yeah.
And it just becomes a tiny little chess match. And Kirk's an enormously valuable piece. So if he has a great series, I think they're going to be hard to beat, defensively and offensively.
Yeah, it's funny. He'll be a good test case for rest versus rust, because he was slumping, but then he hits the home run on Saturday. He has 6 RBI, 2 home run on Sunday. And I was like, oh, I wish they could just keep playing, because his bat. But he also did start around 120 games or so at catcher. And I think that was part of why he was slumping near the end. He's just tired, like the wear and tear. So at the very least, you know, he gets 5-6 days off from that.
That's a really great point. Okay, I've got a couple things here, Matt. I've got NFL questions for you.
Yep.
I've got dot, dot, dot.
Mm-hmm.
And in honor of the movie that's coming out, the Paul Thomas Anderson movie, One Battle After Another, I've got a top 5 Leo DiCaprio list. Which one do you want to do first?
That is a big one. Before we do any, real quick, shout out to our sponsor, Jeff Pollock. He's our lawyer. If you need law help, if you need legal help, if you need a lawyer that you can trust, Jeff Pollock has been with us since day one, and he is a friend. You just go to jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G, as in, gee, I wish I had a good lawyer. Well, now you do, you dummy. By the way, you can tell there's no copy, because I don't think Jeff would want me to say potential future clients are dummies. But yeah, jeffpollock.com. You know what? Fuck it. Let's go to dessert. What's your top 5 there, Bob?
All right, then. By the way, I'm so excited for this movie.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Are you going to see it in the theater?
Yes.
Do you want to see it together?
There's no way we're going to be able to figure out a time where we can both see it together, but I love your optimism.
Excellent point. Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
So before I start my top 5, I want to say there are 2 films that I left out of it,
mm-hmm.
both for different reasons. Mm-hmm. First is The Basketball Diaries,
okay.
which is a movie I really like based on a book by Jim Carroll that I absolutely love. It's got Mark Wahlberg in it, they're kids. It's a story of these guys growing up in New York City, and one of the and becomes a heroin addict. That's the character Jim Carroll, played by Leo DiCaprio. I love the book. I love the story. I always watch it. It's not the best movie. Mm-hmm. So I want, and I thought, you know what? I'm not going to be the hipster.
Yep.
I'm not going to be the hipster. It's not that great. So I'm going to leave it off. The other one is Titanic.
Okay.
Because I've never seen it. So I can't really say.
You've never seen Titanic.
I've never seen Titanic.
Wow.
I also don't drive.
Yeah, no, that's true.
There are huge gaps in my life.
Yeah, yeah, those are too. It's, you know what? It's certainly worth seeing for the filmmaking. It's not a great movie.
Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
Number five, Romeo and Juliet, directed by Baz Luhrmann. And you had to have grown up, you had to have come of age during the 90s to really appreciate this, because every artsy girl out there loved this movie.
Yes, they did.
And it, by osmosis, you had to at least know what was on the soundtrack.
And this movie was important for you because earlier you were doing Latin and poetry. So the artsy girl that was right, that was the Orca, and you were Jaws. and Baz Luhrmann was chumming the waters. Got a Jaws reference in.
Well done. Okay, number four, and I thank AMC for this, The Departed.
Yep.
He's very good in that. William Costigan. There's a great scene with him and Vera Farmiga where he says, the two Ativans, you're giving me two of the sedatives. I love that scene. Okay, number three, surprising, Don't Look Up by Adam McKay. It was on Netflix, a kind of a satirical pro-environmental comedy.
Yep.
He's really good in it.
He is.
He's really good in it. And I find I've rewatched that movie a bunch because usually these star-studded, high concept pieces fall flat. This one actually worked. Kind of like The Big Short. Adam McKay's good at this
stuff. The only thing about Don't Look Up is it really does kind of put you, it really kind of does put you in a bad mood. Like, or at very least, it makes you, not a bad mood, it makes you scared. That's all.
I think that might be the point.
I believe that's 100% the point.
But not your favorite feeling leaving the...
No.
Well, I guess you wouldn't leave the theater because it was on Netflix, but yeah. At the end of it. Okay, number two, Wolf of Wall Street, which is probably Martin Scorsese's best modern movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Taxi Driver and that stuff is still the greatest, but Wolf of Wall Street, maybe even more than Goodfellas. Maybe even more than Goodfellas. It's really good, man.
I love Wolf of Wall Street. It's not as good as Goodfellas. No, it is not as good. It's not as tight. It's a great movie, but it's a little bit long. It's a little self-indulgent. I got nothing against self-indulgence. You know, I was drinking 10-year-old Bordeaux after the colonoscopy, but Goodfellas is like a perfect movie.
Okay. Number one, the only, it has to be, it's the only one left by process of elimination. It's Inception. Inception, I think, is, along with The Matrix, the greatest imaginative action film ever made.
Yep.
And he is so good in it. And you can watch it over and over and over again and still be peeling layers of the onion on that one.
Agreed.
Kind of like The Matrix. So is it the greatest of all the movies? Yeah, it is for me because that's one of my favorite kinds of movies. So, Romeo and Juliet, The Departed, Don't Look Up, Wolf of Wall Street, and number one, Inception.
I mean, there's so many holes here. He might have been better than Brad Pitt in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Overrated movie.
Get the fuck out of here.
So overrated.
Get the fuck out of here. That movie is awesome.
It is not.
It's
a gimmick.
What do you mean it's a gimmick?
It's a gimmick. It's like you keep Inglourious Bastards is an excellent film.
Mm-hmm.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is a knockoff of his own work, Tarantino.
That just makes me angry. All right. Next one, The Aviator, Howard Hughes.
Yeah.
He did an excellent job in that.
He did do, but it's not an excellent movie.
So you decided to leave off the movie he won the Oscar for the, the Revenant.
Yes. Because once again, I'm not sure that. Like, I think it was a good movie. Do you remember the movie Cold Mountain?
I never saw it. I know it was
really good, and it was nominated for an Oscar. And at the end, there's just a certain kind of movie that the Oscar judges like. And is this like, is the Revenant going to be remembered in 50 years?
No.
It's okay. Like, it's good.
Yeah.
And he won the Oscar because it was his time.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like Scorsese won the Oscar for The Departed,
which
isn't even in his top eight best films.
And then Catch Me If You Can, Frank Abagnale Jr.
That one almost made it.
That he was so good in that movie.
Yeah, that one almost made it.
I think for me, I would get rid of Romeo and Juliet. I'd have to get Once Upon a Time, and I'd have to get Catch Me If You Can in it. I'm fine without The Revenant, but I'd have to find a way to get those other ones. I'm always a little biased against Romeo and Juliet. I don't like any work by Shakespeare where they cut lines. I get why they do. The running times of these movies are very long if you keep all the dialogue in.
He was a star in it, though.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I wanted to put it there, apart from the fact that it's, you know, by osmosis had a big impact on my life. But you could see that this kid had something. And the 90s for him were kind of amazing. There's What's Eaten Gilbert Grape.
Yep.
There's a lot of, like, he was just a kid. By the way, you know what his first movie was?
What was it? I got the IMDb thing, so if I say that, I wouldn't know.
Critters 3.
I just saw that. Yes, Critters 3 in 1991. Then after that, Poison Ivy, Growing Pains. I got to tell you, like, no, you didn't see, we did not see Leo coming. You know, like, he was good, you know, he's okay in this stuff. Like, I guess What's Eating Gilbert Grape is when you started to get an idea of it.
Yeah, and then a couple years later, he does Titanic.
Yeah.
I think he was inevitable. He was like Thanos. I think his mom was a casting agent, actually. And I think he was just one, like, he was a bit like, remember the USC quarterback, Todd Marinovich?
Of course.
And he was created to be the super quarterback.
Yep.
He had never had, like, junk food by the time he was 18. They were giving him protein slurry as a six-year-old, stretching his tendons. And goes to USC. He's an incredible prospect. And then flames out in the NFL.
Yeah.
Because he just couldn't handle the pressure.
He was one of the ultimate cautionary tales. His dad is a stereotype of, you know, just over aggressive sports dad. I didn't know that, though, about Leo, but mom may have been a...
I think like making him a star was a family project.
Right.
Which is not such a rare thing. It just usually doesn't work.
No, and you want to try to find a way to have that kid have a balance. But then to be a star, can you have balance?
So here's what I was thinking, because I'm looking at the IMDb, and I have five films here. You mentioned three or four more that easily could have been on this list. That's a hell of a run.
It's incredible.
Where does he belong historically? And I think he's like Larry Holmes. I'll explain after your answer.
Leo is what makes Leo special is he is maybe the last of the old generation.
Yeah.
He is the final bridge. There's, you know, like from the Tom Hanks and Tom Cruise and before that, Jack Nicholson and Dustin Hoffman and all these guys.
Paul Newman, Montgomery Clift. Mm-hmm. There's a long line.
I'm sure. Actors. But like, he kind of represents the last of old Hollywood. Like, we're not going to look at Timothée Chalamet, even though Chalamet's come out and says, I want to be one of the best. Like, I apologize for saying this. Like, and I think Chalamet has some of that in him, but he doesn't feel like he has that same sort of old school. I'm a mystery. I don't do a lot of interviews. I can open a film. I'm bankable. You can open a movie with me. There's fewer of those. And part of it's just because there's 4,000 entertainment options. It's harder and harder for anyone to open a film. But Leo is like that last generation.
Okay, I'm going to jump off the Larry Holmes comparison, and I'm going to move to one that's going to blow your mind. You ready for this? Timothée Chalamet is Terrence Crawford.
Oh, the incredible guy that no one really knows who he is?
Like, and nobody's going to care that much because nobody cares that much about boxing anymore.
Right.
So
yeah.
Even though he might be in the line of Redford and Newman and all these guys, he might grow into that. He might be the next Leo DiCaprio, but it can never be the same because we used to revere actors in the way we used to revere boxers. They're the best at a time when it doesn't matter that much.
It's a great analogy. You're knocking these out of the park. And you're right.
I'm trying now.
Yeah, exactly. the new Macko and Kaz. We're trying. I had to hear, like, I felt shame about not knowing almost nothing about Terrence Crawford. And then he moved up the weight class and he wins and he becomes the champion. And I'm hearing all these people talking about just historically he's doing things that almost no boxer has done. And I'm like, oh, damn it, I'm ignorant. And it is kind of similar with Chalamet. He's done a whole bunch of stuff, but he's not as relevant or, as you say, revered as the past.
And who's he competing against?
Yeah.
Tom Holland?
Mm-hmm. Huh? Yeah. Oh, no, you're right. Like
Andrew Garfield?
Huh? Oof, that was a bit of a drop off from Holland to Garfield. No offense to Garfield. If you want to have fun, Like, you know what? This is fun for me. Going and looking.
Everything is fun for
me. That's true. In like the 70s, 80s, 90s. Go look at a lot of the years, like best actor, and you're like, Jesus Christ, that's a stacked year. You know, how the hell is anyone going to win?
1975 Oscars. Mm. It's an embarrassment of riches. It's incredible. All right, let's do dot, dot, dot.
Let's do dot, dot, dot.
But how long do we have?
We have got, we got time. We got like eight minutes to do it.
Okay, you ready?
Yep.
The U.S. golf fans were assholes, which was bad for the golfers, but great for golf. Dot, dot, dot. If you hate the Leafs, try being a Mets fan. Dot, dot, dot. Anthony Stolarz is now locked in. So at what point does this become Brad Treliving's team? Dot, dot, dot. And here we go. Hear me out.
Okay.
Seafood as a category of food is overrated. Dot, dot, dot.
This is twice I'm going to tell you to fuck off. But... real quick, Bob. I looked it up. Al Pacino, Godfather 2. Jack Nicholson, Chinatown. Albert Finney, Murder on the Orient Express. Dustin Hoffman in Lenny. And they all lost to Art Carney in Harry and Tonto. 1975 Oscars for Best Actor. Stacked year.
Not bad. Not bad. Okay, so which of the dot, dot, dots do you want to do?
We haven't done any Leafs. Okay. Let's do the Brad Treliving, this is now his team, the Stolarz deal.
All right, so here's the thinking behind it. Stolarz is his find, and he's now the goalie of the future. Or at least
he's the goalie of the present. He's the goalie of the present.
Well, but also 4 years. Near future. You're counting on him. If this is Austin Matthews' window, then if he wins a Stanley Cup, it's likely to be with Anthony Stolarz in that.
Yeah, fair.
So
if he was healthy, he certainly played better than Wall.
Yeah, I don't know how he's going to turn out. He's a goalie. Yeah. You never know anything with goalies. The D is pretty new. Like, you take Morgan Riley out of it, who's survived a couple of different administrations. They're pretty new. Mm-hmm. You know, Carlo and Tanev.
Yep.
They've rebuilt the defense. But... because it's Matthews, Nylander, and Tavares still in that top six category, it still feels like an old team. Like, this belongs to another administration. And I'm wondering at what point, what has to happen for this to actually feel like Brad Treliving's team and not something that they're fixing from Kyle Dubas?
I think they're almost there. I think the echoes of Kyle Dubas get smaller and get smaller and smaller. Because... you know what word everyone was using when the Stolarz deal happened? Mm. And by the way, here's the thing with the Blue Jays. They've been so good. We're like, oh, yeah, Stolarz. Oh, that deal got done. It kind of got buried. The word tidy. Everyone's like, oh, this was a tidy amount of work done by Brad Treliving. This is a tidy contract. Tidy contract is code for, oh, the player didn't get everything he wanted. In fact, this is probably a team-friendly deal. Like 3 point whatever million it was.
375.
375. A lot of people were thinking it was going to be close to 5 million and not even close to it. I think the fact that that happened put some more distance with Dubas. Marner gone, put some distance, more balance. So I think we're very close to this just kind of being Brad Treliving's team.
Especially if he's good. Tanev is, to borrow a line from The Departed, Jack Nicholson says to somebody, how's your mother? And the guy goes, she's on her way out. And his response, do you remember it?
We all are.
We all are. Act accordingly.
Yes. I brought it
up. Tanev's on his way out. You just want him to act accordingly. He's got a couple more good years in him. That was a long way to get to that point.
He played 75 games last year. I know this is not about Brad Treliving. When I bring up...
but it is, though, because he's the ace that they brought in to anchor the defense. It is about Brad Treliving. He's counting on that guy being good enough for the next couple of years so that Austin Matthews has a bona fide quality defense behind him.
No, he needs Tanev 2 more years of 70 games of the regular season and not missing any postseason.
And he could go Jake Muzzin at any time, and we all know this. Jake Muzzin was reliable. He was great. We loved him. He got hurt. He never came back. Tanev's had a lot of injuries. I love Chris Tanev. I've been wanting to get him on the team for like 8 seasons. Mm-hmm. I'm thrilled that he's here. You know, the Stolarz deal is, I don't know that Brad Treliving is really getting all the credit he deserves. He found someone else's backup, brought him here, proved that he could be a number one, and then signed him for a team-friendly deal. That's kind of what you want your GM to do
Yes.
across the board.
Oh, yeah. The Leafs have never been better in net. With him, Wall, Hildeby, has got a lot of potential. By the way, I don't know if you know this, Bob. If you work in sports media, you're contractually obligated. If you talk about Dennis Hildeby, you have to say his weight and height or you'll be fired.
There's something magical, and I'll tell you what the number is about the height of a goalie. Yeah. As soon as they hit 6'6",
yeah.
And it started with Ben Bishop.
Oh, yeah.
He was never Ben Bishop. He was 6'6", Ben Bishop.
That's right. He was good. He wasn't great, but man, he was tall. It's so true.
But if you're 6'4", get out of here with that shit.
Yeah, exactly. Boring. Been there, done it.
That's the magic number for goalies, 6'6". Yeah. Six, six.
And it's also this team because it's, you know, Berube was his guy, like, you know, and so, yeah.
Do you know what it is for defensemen?
What?
6'8".
Oh, God.
The Zdeno Chara, 6'8". God.
There's just something, you can't take your eyes off of that when you see someone that tall.
On skates.
On skates.
Ben Danford gets sent down, and he feels like he's going to be an NHL player, but it'd be nice if the Leafs at some point stopped using first-round draft picks to get depth players. Easton Cowan feels like he's going to be a pro.
Yep.
But he's, you know, I think he's going to be like a Connor Brown, where he's a spark plug, fun guy who can be a plus to a team, 100%. But I don't see him being an important part of a team.
Not now. You know, we'll
or in the future.
I think he's
too small.
Yeah, he is small. But then everyone brings up Patrick Kane. I'm like, great, give me seven other examples.
Yeah, Patrick Kane is generationally gifted.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, no. I agree. I think Cowan will spend more time with the Marlies than the Maple Leafs this year. The U.S. fans at the Ryder Cup, I mean, they were assholes. They absolutely were assholes. And I don't think anyone was happier Sunday night than Rory McIlroy. Like, you throw out any other human being to me, I don't know if anyone was happier than Rory on the bus, singing, celebrating, holding that trophy, telling a fan on Saturday to shut the fuck up, and then hits a shot like 2 feet, if that, from the hole.
Great play rarely makes for great memories.
Mm-hmm.
Every champion plays great. That's how you become champion. You can't play okay and become champion. How many golf events go by where someone performs well, outlasts the competition, and who gives a shit the next day, except for the hardcore golf fans? But now, you know, it's one of the most exciting events on the 2026 calendar in sports? Ryder Cup.
That's 27, unfortunately.
27?
Every 2 years. Yeah. It'll be in Ireland. Oh, yeah.
Well, no, but I'm not a golf fan. Yeah. You know this. I don't golf. In fact, actually, I'm even pretty good at it because I tried it and somebody told me I had a natural swing.
Ah.
So I refuse to play anymore because I might accidentally get good at it and that would force me to golf. And I hate golf.
That's a good point. No, I golfed twice in my life. And it's
you
a
have
day.
To, you have to follow it because you do sports radio.
Yeah.
But if golf went away, would you care?
I would care for the majors and just a really compelling story.
Yeah.
And that's about it. But no, you're right. The Ryder Cup 2027, everyone's going to be into it. It was absolutely great for golf and just Bryson DeChambeau versus Rory. The one thing is a reminder is, man, I hate Liv because like John Rahm is great. Mm-hmm. And now we won't see him again until there's a major, you know. So, I was happy for the Europeans. I was rooting for them.
So it goes back to Europe, right?
Yeah.
It'll be held in Europe.
Yeah,
so you know what they need to do?
Mm.
Bus all the golf fans out. You know, give them coupons, send them to a mall, do something, and bring in soccer fans.
Just hooligans.
Just, hey, Newcastle United, you got any fans kicking around?
No, but they want to go the other way. They want to show that they're classier than the Americans were. We'll see.
You say that.
Yeah.
Michelle Obama's, when they go low, we go high.
Yeah.
We'll see when we get closer to the date. You're not gonna bite on the seafood?
That's the last thing we're going to do, and good for you for you're not going to bite on the seafood. Wordplay.
I didn't even think that. Okay, before we do that, I got one crazy NFL question
to
ask you, okay?
Go.
Who do you think has more touchdowns this season, Caleb Williams or Josh Allen? Throwing.
Josh Allen.
Caleb Williams has 8. Josh Allen has 7.
Really?
Yeah, crazy, right?
Wow.
I want to do a thing called If I Was a Betting Man.
Yeah.
If I was a betting man, Matt, and you do this, you're sponsored by FanDuel.
That's right.
Right? Would it be crazy to make a bet where you take Caleb Williams to throw more touchdown passes than Josh Allen?
Yes. Yeah, that would be. Yes, that would be crazy.
James Cook is number 2 in rushing.
Mm-hmm.
He's gonna absorb a lot of touchdowns.
Right.
Josh Allen's going to run for touchdowns. It's not total. It's just throwing. Caleb Williams has an offensively minded
coach and Ben Johnson.
And I'm sure that's why he has eight, mm-hmm. because they're going to throw the ball a lot in scoring situations.
But Buffalo doesn't have a great defense. So there should be more shootouts.
And the Bears do?
No, you're right. Bears don't have a great defense either.
Just think of the odds you could get, though.
Oh, at the beginning of the year, you get probably 6-7-1, like plus 750 easily, maybe even higher. Wow, good for Caleb. He's on my fantasy team.
All right. Hear me out.
Yep.
Seafood as a category of food is overrated.
All right.
..
All right, just explain.
Shrimp?
Uh-huh.
It's often so-so. It can be good, but more often than not, it's discount. They always say Argentinian wild caught, which means basically at the bottom of some net, we just plucked out some shrimp. The shrimp ring gets warm at a party. It goes bad fast.
The shrimp ring goes warm at a party because people are idiots. You know what party the shrimp ring doesn't go warm at? Party.
A Matt Koss party.
A Matt Koss party. Guess what?
Ain't no party like a Matt Koss shrimp party.
That's right. When Amy's away, I break out the shrimp because she doesn't like the smell of it when I'm cooking it.
Lobster?
Uh-huh.
Great.
Great.
But there's only one real way to eat it.
Drawn butter.
It's like the missionary position of luxury foods. Mm-hmm. No one's going to say it's bad.
Nope.
It's just a little bit of the same thing every single time. Crab? Too expensive. St. Lawrence Market, 99 cents a pound for king crab's legs. Who can afford that?
99 cents?
Or 99 bucks.
I was like, oh my God, Bob, Bob, go chick chicka. I'm going to be racing out of here as fast. Like, get out of my way, old man.
Mussels.
Mussels are a little overrated.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about the sauce that you put them in. Scallops, mm-hmm. too hard to cook. Mm-hmm. They're ruined more often than not. Clams, I really like. Mm-hmm. But they don't get enough love.
They don't.
Especially fried clams.
Yep.
You know, when we think about clams for some crazy reason, here's what I was thinking about the category. All of these things can work. All of these things can be excited. But if we compared culinary food groups to a football team, poultry is the running game. Beef, lamb, and pork is your throwing game, mm-hmm. is your passing game. And seafood is special teams.
Oh, get the fuck out of here.
Seafood is special teams. Occasionally thrilling. You would hate to see the game without them, but nobody wins because they have great special teams.
Shrimp is the workhorse running back. To me, shrimp is dependable.
No, just chicken.
Give me the ball. Chicken's boring.
No.
Chicken's boring. Chicken is dry. Chicken's a compromise. Chicken's a, I'm trying to lose
chicken
weight.
Chicken wings, chicken Kiev, chicken piccata.
Garlic.
Chicken shrimp. Cordon bleu.
Oh, please. Get out of here. You get like shrimp and pasta is fantastic. A coconut shrimp. The only reason why coconut should exist. I'm hungry right now for some shrimp. Get out of here.
If you go to Costco right now,
uh-huh.
you can buy an enormous bag of mediocre shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
Cook it up and it will be mediocre.
That's the same thing with chicken. It's the same thing with chicken.
Chicken has so many varieties, though. Chicken is like Mike Martz's playbook. It's the Cheesecake Menu playbook. There's a thousand ways to cook chicken. There's not a thousand ways to cook shrimp. You've already run out of ways to explain shrimp.
Bob, a thousand ways? May I introduce you to Bubba Gump? I believe there's like 100,000 different ways to make shrimp there, Bob.
You know, when he said shrimp a la king, that's not even a thing, okay. Bubba Gump. And you have to admit, crab's too expensive and lobster, look, it's great. Everybody loves lobster, or should. Give it a try. It's really good. But is there any way to eat it other than with butter?
No. Oh, no, no. Lobster,
it's one thing.
Lobster was designed for drawn butter. I agree with you on the crab. Scallops is really hard, but, you know.
Mussels, way overrated.
Mussels are
when
overrated.
When you go to a restaurant and everyone's like, let's share a plate of mussels, mm-hmm. it's basically like, let's get a bowl of seafood raisins.
I mean, mussels are all about how good is the bread with the mussels. That's
which is
the
about
key.
The bread and the sauce which and not the mussel.
No, that is my point. All right, Bob. I've been trying to circle to come up with a clever ending, but you've upset me with this. You've upset me with Leonardo DiCaprio. You've impressed me with all the analogies and with the Latin. Clearly, Bob, on this podcast, you did try harder.
No, not this podcast.
Oh,
this
new Macko and Cause.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.